Good evening, everyone. What a great joy it is to be here. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Because it's Thursday night, and sometimes people can feel a bit worn out from the week. I'd like to just take a moment and to focus on recharging and regenerating. Our tendency when we go through the day is to express ourselves through our life energy. We give of ourselves all through the day. And then towards the end of the day, perhaps in the afternoon or in the evening, we feel completely worn out. We feel de-energized. It's not a lack of life energy. Life energy is constantly flowing to us from the medulla and through the spine. However, when we don't act consciously in remembrance of that flow of life energy, we inadvertently cut that flow off. We look for stimulants of drinks. We look for food. We look for various kinds of preoccupations in order to keep us going. I was standing in the coffee shop down in Ashland the other day, and a woman said, came up to the bar there, and she knew the gal who was serving the espressos behind, and she says, "Whatever you do, make it so. Wakes me up." It's the middle of the afternoon. And she was depleted, and she looked depleted. Her life energy aura around her was depleted. And really, what she needed was life energy. She didn't need an espresso shot. She needed that infusion of life energy. So when we remember that, and particularly when we feel tired and exhausted from the day, if we can turn our minds to behind us, because that's where the flow comes from. The mouth of God, as is talked about in the Bible, comes through the medulla oblongata. It is through the mouth of God that all life is sustained. And this vibratory connection with the Om or the Amen flows in easily and voluntarily. However, we can block it out. We can, through anxiety, through fear, through preoccupations of the day, close ourselves down. When we feel like we have to protect ourselves in this world, we inadvertently close ourselves down. So right now, I'd like you to focus on the medulla, and not with any sense of force at all. This is not about force. This is not about even will. It's about allowing, opening yourself and allowing the flow, the natural flow of prana, of life force to come in through the medulla, to come in and all up and down your spine so that you can feel that there's a flow coming from behind you and into your body. And if you are feeling particular places of fatigue, of exhaustion, just feel that these living waters, as Jesus described them, are coming in on this parched ground And at first, the parched ground may be resistant to the living waters, but as it gets saturated, it begins to soften the ground and then penetrate into the ground. And just feel that these cells of your body are being filled with this life energy. Places where you feel sore or pain, let it come in and support those areas in your body. If your shoulders, your neck, your jaw are tight from the day's activities and tension, simply feel this coming in as a warm current that is there to support you, not one more thing on your to-do list, not one more thing that you are being demanded of. This is your time to receive. And so to open yourself to the greatest degree that you can in the moment, feeling that flow coming into you, supporting you, comforting you, strengthening you. Receiving, and as you receive, let it wash away all negativity. Let it wash away all tiredness. Let it wash away everything that is not perfect health and peace. See it coming in through the medulla and saturating the brain cells and supporting the brain cells. And perhaps before, where there were fast-paced thoughts or erratic thoughts or dispersed thoughts or just plain out fatigue thoughts, let that come in as a smooth flow of comforting life energy, strengthening life energy. If you feel any parts of your body that have been sick or in other ways out of harmony, let it come into those areas, saturate those areas in a warm yellow golden light. And now feel that flow coming from behind you and through you and expressing itself out around in the electrical field around you, the auric field that surrounds you. And again, this is nothing that you're doing by force. You're just simply observing and allowing and opening yourself to this flow. And then let that flow just continue to express itself out. You can expand your mind and grow larger. One of the things that happens when we become preoccupied with the things of the world is we tend to contract the mind, contract the thoughts. Now expand your mind, expand your thoughts. Feel yourself flowing out into this room itself. Flowing out in that golden light. Flowing out in that strength and that comfort. Embracing, so to speak, the room itself. And go on expanding your mind, expanding your spirit. Until you expand out and you feel that this entire earth is but a bubble floating through space, and that you're embracing this bubble called the earth, the land, the atmosphere, the auric field around in that yellow golden light. And through your own vision, you bless this world with that light as it flows through you easily, naturally. And feeling yourself expand out and out into infinite space, but it's not cold, it's not frightening, it's just you. It's so natural. Until you identify with the entire physical creation itself, the entire universe, the cosmos. And breathe with the cosmos. Feel it breathing with you. Or you are breathing with it. It is hard to tell. And you feel that calm radiance Now transfer your mind back to your little human body. Feel how small it is. Keeping that vast universal spirit encased in such a tiny little vessel. And then you can release yourself back into omnipresence. And breathe with the universe itself as it breathes with you. And you can expand yourself even further into unlimited reaches. Or you can be as small as an atom. Because in spirit, it is all a matter of thought. And feel tremendous forces flowing to you from behind you. Forces of light. Forces of life energy, healing, making you whole. Until there is nothing else but that. And now see yourself tomorrow, and as you leave here tonight, just carrying that with you, feeling the flow from behind you, opening yourself to that flow, knowing that at any time, in any place, you can allow that flow to continue. That is your eternal divine inheritance. And no one and nothing can take that away from you. The only price of admission is to open yourself to it and allow. To let go of fear. To let go of doubt. To let go of preoccupations of the world and receive. Make this your meditation each morning and night to receive. You give out to the world all through the day. This is an opportunity for you to truly receive, recharge, regenerate. Speaking to my nephew, who's a Kriyabon. He went in for a job interview, and so he called and let me know how it went. And he said, well, it went very well, but I failed completely. And I said, oh. He said, I did very well at it, but I completely forgot to let God flow through me at the time. I just got caught up in the moment. And you can see how easy that is. And how, what an ally we have, what a resource we have when we open ourselves up to that divine flow. How it guides us, how it energizes us, how we can open ourselves to that complete flow. So it's something to remember. Diane Devereaux sent me an email with some funnies in it. This is, these are answers written by kids. And the question is, how do you decide who to marry? How do you decide who to marry? And so Alan, at age 10, has it all figured out. He says, you got to find somebody who likes the same stuff. Like, if you like sports, she should like that you like sports. And she should keep the chips and dip coming. And this is from Kristen at age 10, no person really decides before they grow up who they're going to marry. God decides it all way before. And you get to find out later who you're stuck with. What would you do on a first date that was turning sour? And Craig, age 9, said, I'd run home and play dead. The next day, I would call all the newspapers and make sure they wrote me in all the dead columns. When is it okay to kiss someone? And Pam, at age 7, when it's okay to kiss someone is when they're rich. And Anita, age 9, says, it is better to be single or married, she was asked. It is better for girls to be single, but not for boys. Boys need someone to clean up after them. Oh, that's very funny. How would the world be different if people didn't get married? And Calvin, at age 8, said, there sure would be a lot of kids to explain, wouldn't there? And how would you make a marriage work? And Ricky, age 10, he's already got it all figured out. Tell your wife she looks pretty, even if she looks like a dump truck. That boy's going to go far. From Master's Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. This comes from chapter 13, verse 2. O descendant of Bharata, Arjuna, also know me to be the Kshatra Ajna, the perceiver, in all the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas are the bodies evolved out of the cosmic creative principle in nature. The understanding of Kshatriya and Kshatriya Ajna that is deemed by me as constituting true wisdom. Now, it's really very important for us to understand how we're constructed. There are people today who are very busy studying the body. And I've worked with some psychiatrists and others who have the belief system that we are entirely constructed from this body. Consciousness, mind, everything comes from the body. And you can see how they could come to that conclusion, because if you have a stroke, for instance, and you lose a part of the mind, or a part of the brain, rather, you lose part of the mind as well. You are losing function. You lose memory. So you could deduce that if you lose a certain part of your brain, you are also losing your mind. You are losing yourself. And that it's a construction of the body. However, from a spiritual standpoint, it's the opposite. That mind uses the brain as a vehicle in order to express itself. This is critical to understand if you are to know the true nature of where you have come from and who you are. In order to understand who you are, you must go into a deeper connection with that part of you who existed before your body. Now, there would be many people who would question whether that is even possible for you to be able to connect with something that abstract, as they think of it, that far away. But the truth is, that very self, that very being, has existed right inside of you. That self that you identify yourself with throughout your entire life of the body is the same. There's a certain sameness. Now, your thoughts, your feelings, your outward conditions, they've all changed. You're not a little boy and you're not a little girl, presumably anymore. You've grown up from that. And yet, you can remember back to your earliest ages and your earliest memories. And there's a sense of, this is me, this is who I am. And it has very little or nothing to do with the name that you're called, with the family that you're born into, with this other situations that surround you. It's something that you know. And you have known all of your life. You didn't need me or anybody else to tell you that. But perhaps you never have thought about it exactly in that way until it was pointed out to you. This sense of self is your true self. It goes beyond thought. It goes beyond emotion. Because both of those are in a constant state of change. There's something that is very close and personal to you that transcends time. Because throughout all this time, there has been a sense of yourself that has been identical, has been exactly the same. Now, we have so many billion cells within the brain. And they are all busy. They're doing something. Now, some of them are more dormant than others, but they all have life energy. And when you begin to meditate, there's a reason why we're told to focus on the ajna here. The ajna is the light of the divine that is shining right within your being. And you may well ask, well, if it's the light of my being, how why is it when I close my eyes, I see darkness, I don't see light? And it is because this, what is called your third eye here, your ajna, is not yet open. It's lying in a dormant state. And it's dormant from perhaps the time that you are born, but not always. There are children who see the astral planes. If they don't see it when they're waking, they see it when they're dreaming. Small babies spend most of their time dreaming. They're still largely within the astral worlds. They've not yet completely identified with this physical body. But through time and through down through the years, that identification generally becomes complete. There are a few notable exceptions to that. What is called an avatar is born into this world. Ananda Moyama was one such avatar. And from the very moment that she first was conscious of being in a body, she knew this pure I am state, this pure existence state. She never lost it until she decided to go through a period of what is called a lila, or a play, where she went into delusion, and then she struggled to get back out of delusion. She practiced sadhana, but before that she had perfect apprehension, and she voluntarily went into this period of ignorance so that she could go through all the things that other individuals go through as they ascend from the human to the divine. Now, in Mother Hamilton's case, she came without any karma of her own, but she chose to incarnate in a state of ignorance. And through her life, and being an example in her life of practicing that spiritual sadhana, that spiritual practice, that would bring her up from the human to the divine. And so these great souls come. They don't remain completely absent of any of the ignorance. There are a few who do that. But they come out of compassion. They come out of compassion, and they come in order to show us the way. They come in order to tell us the truth of who and what we really are. When you think about all the advertising, all the inducements, all the education, everything that you receive in this world that tells you you are this body, you are separate from the whole, that you need to go out and you need to make your way in this world. And there's nobody that but you that can do it. And there's a certain relative truth to all of that. But you can see where the reinforcement comes again and again and again that denies your inner divinity. And then when some great soul comes along, such as Jesus, and points this out, that you are divine. That that individual is cast away, sometimes violently, and put away because that information is not welcome. Now you would think that those who are practicing spiritual practice would be the first to welcome that, but it's not so. And it's because the ego has hijacked the whole movement. So we have to be careful of this. So this ajna is very, very important here. And kshatriya means field. So kshatriya ajna is this field of consciousness that is here. It is the light of your being. And this sixth chakra has a dual nature. Here, at the ajna, is light. In the back, at the medulla, is sound. And that is where the om comes in. And this is the highest, most pure vibration throughout all creation. When you go beyond the sixth chakra at the ajna and the medulla, you go straight into pure spirit. You go beyond duality. So it is said that the Christ is the only begotten Son of God. Now this is not meant to say that Jesus, the man, was the only begotten Son of God, because in the first of John it says, to all them who received him gave he power to become sons of God. So you have that within you. If you are receptive, just as we were going through the exercise of recharging and regenerating your body, you allowed, you opened, you received. You don't have to become that because you are already that. You are that divine being already, only you live in ignorance of it. And if you're ignorant of a certain thing, it might as well not exist. If you could imagine being out on the sea and somehow getting lost, and you washed up on a beach someplace, and you thought, this beach is isolated, there's nobody here, it must be a deserted island. But you were to walk over a hill and you see there a hotel complex and all the niceties of modern day civilization, and you would be very, very astonished after having believed that you were on a completely isolated and deserted island. For that individual who never took the time or the effort to go over that mountain, they could continue believing that they existed on this isolated island forever. And so for those who are spiritually unadventurous, they don't explore, they don't go out, they don't really want to know the truth. They are happy to the extent that they are not motivated in order to get something else. So we have to, first of all, understand what is the real nature of our being. And these teachings you will not get many other places, because they are brought by Master, they were elucidated by Mother. This is the very cream of spiritual thought and practice that you're receiving right here. And if you pay attention and you apply it, it will enable you to become that Son of God. Now, Son doesn't denote a sex in this case. It's simply a reference. We are all children of God, man or woman. And there have been many women as well as men who have achieved that higher state of consciousness. So every one of us has that ability if we would exercise it. So the Kshetra Ajna is here. The Kshetriya, the field, is here. In the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about the Kshetriya. And that is the field of battle. But the field of battle happens right within you. It is in your body. It is within your mind. It is within your emotional makeup. These make up the positive and negative. Those forces and spirits that are rising up, that are striving for the light, and those that are dragging you down and keeping you in the darkness. And they're strong, but they're not invincible. But you have to recognize your own internal makeup, and that you are filled with this light when you open yourself to it. Now, at some point in the distant past, this is what God showed me. That all of us as individual souls, as Atmans, made the choice. We wanted to have this experience in this earthly consciousness. And we closed the door. Nobody arbitrarily closed that door for us. That's what's being described in the Garden of Eden. When Adam, which represents reason, and Eve, which represents feeling, made the choice to step out of the garden. And as a result of that, fear entered in, shame entered in, lying entered in, and then eventually jealousy and murder through their children. And on it goes, all down through the generations. And now there is complete and total ignorance of who we really are. So that people are happy to while away their time doing the most kinds, and often cases, inane types of things. And really, they have this tremendous treasure. You have this tremendous treasure right within you. But how do you act? Do you act as if you have a tremendous treasure? If I told you, if you're awake at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning or 5:30 tomorrow morning. And if you're awake at that time, I'll have a $100,000 check for you. You think you'll have any trouble waking up at that time? We'd be there with bells on. And yet you have a tremendous treasure residing within you. And to make the effort to try to access that, you see, we really doubt it. We really don't believe it. Otherwise, we would be running towards the goal. When Papa was ripened fruit and he was ready to be awakened, and his father initiated him into Ram Nam, and his father just simply said, repeat this always, constantly. And Papa took it to heart, and he started chanting it all through the day. It was always on his lips, it was always going on in the background, no matter what else he was doing. And then he started staying up later and later at night. He was chanting. And what was he feeling while he was chanting? He was feeling bliss. He was feeling peace. He was feeling joy. It wasn't all the time. It wasn't constant yet. But it was intoxicating when it came. And he learned if he stuck with it, if he kept going with it, that he would be lifted up more and more often. He felt a certain kind of purification begin to happen within him. Now, this is just simply from repeating God's name. And we've all been taught, he taught, mother taught me, we've all learned, Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Yet who repeats it constantly? And Papa said, do one other thing. He said, always think on the attributes of God. Oh, Lord, you are all powerful. You are all good. You are all wise. You are all present in every being. And so while he's chanting this, he's also thinking on the attributes of it. And he felt uplifted through this. He felt transformed. Now, there were times when he went into dead zones. And this happens, the desert in life. But it just spurred him on even more because he wanted to get through those. And so it didn't deter him at all. He worked harder. And pretty soon it was just going all the time, all the time. It couldn't stop. He couldn't stop it. He didn't want to stop it. And he surrendered himself. You see, we're afraid to surrender. We're afraid that if we surrender that we'll get shortchanged. We're afraid that we'll die. We're afraid that everything will be taken away from us. As if we created it in the first place. Isn't that the great joke? That we think we created it. And yet, what did we create? How could we create? If we didn't have the life force, the intelligence, could we create anything? If we didn't have the raw materials of this earth, could we create anything? What did we create, really? When you really analyze it. What we create is our willingness and our openness to express the divine in all ways. And so Papa took that, and he kept going with it, and he surrendered himself. Now just imagine. He's feeling the interprompting to leave his home. Now, it's not a suggestion that you leave your home. But he felt that interprompting. And so he went out, and he didn't take any money with him. Whatever money he took with him, he threw away. He changed his clothes. He just had one cloth with him and one spare cloth to pull over him when he was sleeping. And he just went walking, completely and totally dependent upon God. He walked and traveled all over India, from north to south, the east to west. If somebody tried to offer him money, he eschewed it. If somebody gave him some food, he would take a little bit of it. And then he would go on. He would go on without any preparation, without any thought for the morrow. Now, isn't this what Jesus taught? And yet, which of us actually do it? Aren't we filled with worry? Aren't we consumed with the little things of this life? But just imagine being that way with Papa. There is a wonderful soul that I met once, called Peace Pilgrim. She was a woman in her 50s. I believe she was in her 50s at the time. She would take long walks out into the woods and she would meditate deeply. And she would commune with God. And one day she felt God was telling her. She was so concerned about peace in this world. And she knew that peace had to first begin within because she had that experience herself. And so she decided to walk 25,000 miles for peace. Now, when she left, and when I met her, she wore a pair of tennis shoes, a pair of socks, some cotton pants, a sweatshirt, and it had two pockets in it, and she kept her mail in that. She carried no money. She vowed that she would fast until given food, that she would walk until given rest. And she set out, and on her sweatshirt it said 25,000 miles for peace. So people would stop. They would ask her. So she would tell them about it. And she would help people. And she would give them advice. She told me the story of a young mother who was having difficulty. She would get enraged with her children. She was felt kind of stuck in the home. She had these very young children. She would get so angry with them, and she would yell at them, and sometimes she would hit them. And so Peace Pilgrim listened to her, and the woman asked, "What can I do? I can't leave the home. I have these small children who are in my charge. There's nobody else who can look after them. So what do I do when I get so enraged?" Peace Pilgrim, she had just this marvelous answer for her. And she said, "I tell you what you do. When you get enraged like that, start running. Run in place, right there in the living room, right, whatever room you're in with the kids, just start running right there." Well, the woman thought perhaps that Peace Pilgrim was a little bit daft, but she was open enough that she would try it. So the next time she got so angry and she wanted to yell, and she just started running in place. Well, the first thing is all the kids just stopped what they were doing. No, didn't say a word, just looking at their mother, wondering if she'd gone insane. What is going on with her? And then they started laughing. And then she started laughing. And she fell down laughing, and they were all laughing together. And it broke the spell. It broke the spell. And then any time that she would feel that rage, but it didn't come so often after that. And it just broke the pattern. It broke the spell of what was going on. Isn't that a lovely thing, a story that she told, how she helped change that woman's life and the children, and who knows how many generations down from that will benefit because of what she was able to give that woman. And she walked all over this world, this country, 25,000 miles on foot, didn't accept any rides, walked wherever she went, whatever the weather was. She told me another story. She was walking across the Midwest. It was winter time, so, you know, she just didn't take it soft and easy. And she was walking across, and this terrible whiteout blizzard came. And it was snowing so hard, and she was walking across the field. She was just trying to get to some kind of shelter someplace, and she just felt herself freezing to death. I knew a young man who was a truck driver whose truck froze up in one of these kind of snowstorms. He walked just 1 mile, and he didn't think that he's going to be able to make it. He's very young and healthy. And so here's this woman. She's walking across this field. She sees a cardboard box. She sees it as God's gift to her, and she crawls inside this large cardboard box that protected her from the wind, you see, and from the direct elements, and she was able to weather out the storm there. And when she came out of that cardboard box, the wind had died down, the sun was shining, and she got out and she continued on her way. And if she would get to a place and she was tired and she was weary and it was time to go to sleep, she would look at a piece of concrete, and she'd tell her body, she'd say, "Body, you lay down and you go to sleep on that concrete." And she'd lay down and she'd go to sleep on that concrete. She wasn't sick one day from the time that she left her home. Not one day. No cold, no flu, nothing. In all that time. She carried no money with her. She had her correspondence in her pockets. And this is the way that she traveled. She said that she was afraid one time, and a man picked her up, and he had a gun and he had a knife, and she was certain that he intended to do harm. And she began to talk to him about peace and what her mission was. And as she talked, at first he was very gruff, but gradually he began to listen. And as he began to listen, the whole thing changed over. And he ended up changing himself. He couldn't stand up against her goodness, you see. And so here's a Western example of a woman who lived like a sadhu. She didn't say, and I don't know what her background was in terms of religious thought, but she lived just like an Indian sadhu, traveling from place to place. And by the time I knew her, she accepted rides. She had gone over 50,000 miles for peace. And she knew that peace started from within, individual by individual, finding peace within themselves. And when, you know, there's been mathematical studies done by sociologists. And when there's a very few people, maybe 2 or 3%, who are very committed within a group or within a society, very committed, either for positive or negative, that 2 or 3% can change an entire society when they're very, very committed. And so she knew that if she could get enough people beginning to really focus on peace, and that peace came from God, that this entire world can change. And it is true. It is true. And you can start with yourself. You can start today. You can start right now by living a more peaceful life within yourself. Learning to trust in God. Learning to surrender to God. Learning to turn yourself over to God. And allowing that divine consciousness to move through you, to guide you, to direct you. And when you surrender to that, your entire life changes. Now, you will certainly encounter fear, because you'll wonder, what's going to happen to me? Will I be able to pay my mortgage? Will I be able to carry on? And the truth is that divine consciousness wants everything good for you. Everything good for you. Including material prosperity. You don't have to walk out of your door. You don't have to live in complete poverty. That's not everybody's calling. We live a householder's path here. And so we live in the world, but not of the world. Because inwardly, we're always tuning in to that divine consciousness. Now, if you say, well, what is this divine consciousness? I don't know that. Then pay attention to your own conscience. Pay attention to what you know to be what the right do's and don'ts are. And begin to attune yourself more and more to what you know to be the highest light within you. Treat other people as you yourself would like to be treated. This one golden rule could change this world. Can you imagine this entire world going according to that? Not because it's imposed by a government or by law, but because people's hearts have been awakened to that. They've seen the example of it. They've seen the example in you. And that you can help change this world. You are an agent of change. There's a reason why you have incarnated at this time. And it's not just to while away your days. This world is in need of help. It's in a time of transition. And it doesn't need you AWOL. You need to show up. You need to be counted in. Now, this does not necessarily mean that you'll be on nationwide TV or that you'll be doing other great things in that way. Mother Teresa said a wonderful thing. She said, there are no large acts of love, there are only small acts of love. And every day you can do some small acts of love. You can give a smile. It doesn't cost you a thing. You can give some kindness. You can give some soft, reassuring words. You can do what you can do and what's presented to you to do. That is your life and it is valuable. And nobody else can do your job for you. If you don't do it, it goes without being done. And if you have a feeling there's something great in this world for you to do, but you don't know what it is, then stay tuned. Stay quiet. Go deeper into the silence until you know what it is that you've come to do. Ask God. to open your eyes so that you know why you are here. And this kshetra ajna right here will begin to open up. And it will begin to inform the whole rest of your body. In the New Testament, when it says that to go out and spread the word all over the world, it's not talking about a religion that's being sold from door to door. It's talking about your body. Your body is your world. And the transformation that needs to occur needs to happen right within your own body so that there is no place of darkness. There's no place that you're holding aside from that light, from that intelligence, from that Christ consciousness, that you are literally exploding with light. You're radiating with light from every part and parcel of your being. Don't you see? You are a divine being in nature, but you parade around in this mask that you are something much, much less. There's a story, a wonderful story told in India about a mother lion one day, and she is in a very weakened condition. And she saw a herd of sheep out, and so she decided that she needed to be able to eat, and she knew that she felt that she was dying and she was pregnant. And just as she is leaping for the sheep, she was so worn out with her life, she died in that very instant, and the lion cub was born in that very instant. Well, not having a lion mother, it looked around and it saw these sheep. So it took one of the sheep as its mother, and the mother, amazingly enough, took this lion, who they're normally afraid of, as her cub, and raised it. And the sheep lion grew up believing that it's a sheep like the rest. And it would bleat, and it would run around, and if there's any other lions came around or any other danger, it'd run away along with all the other sheep. It didn't realize it was a lion. Well, one day, the king of the jungle was walking through, and he spied this group of sheep, and to his amazement, he saw this lion running with the sheep. And when he appeared, the sheep took off running, and so did this lion, bleating and afraid. And he thought, this is embarrassing. What is this? And so he ran down this lion. Well, the lion thought that it was going to be killed because he thought he was just a sheep. And so the king of the jungle said, what's wrong with you? Don't you know you're a lion? And it just sat there bleating and bleating. So he said, something's wrong with this lion here, you know, a little bit off. So he decided that he'd take him over, and he took him to the water, and he drug him. Oh, the sheep was so scared. He closed his eyes, bleeding, thought for sure he was going to be killed. Drug him to the water, and then made him look into the water, the mirror-like reflection. And it was then, to the amazement of the sheep lion, that he saw that he was really in the form of a lion. And all of this time, he had believed himself to be a sheep. And the moral of the story is that the guru is the king of the jungle, and he drags the aspirant over to the mirror to see and make him look, you are not a sheep. You were born to be a master. A master of yourself. You were born in order to aspire to and to realize your divine nature. This is not a path for wimps. It's not a path for those who shirk aside. It's not a path for those who are not adventurous. You've got to be willing. You've got to be willing and with a great sense of will. Determined. That you want to wake up, it's not easy to do. But it is possible. And when you awaken out of your sheep-like state into your true form and nature, then you marvel that you ever thought that you belonged in this tiny, encapsulated, little human ego. And you wonder how you ever fit inside such a tiny little consciousness. This is the good news that was preached, the good news that is to be preached throughout all the world, throughout your being, throughout your body. And if you will take up the challenge, if you will put yourself into the game and not stand aside, you will prove everything that I am saying. My guru came and she gave me that challenge and I took up that challenge, and yet not I, because the little I would have preferred to have set it aside, but something drove me and would not let me rest until I had proven the challenge and had realized the truth that she taught. And not because I repeat it like some dumb parrot, but I know the truth that she taught. I know the truth that Master taught. I know the truth that Babaji and Jesus have taught. And it is freedom. It is eternal freedom of the spirit. And if you will take that up, you will realize it yourself. It is not to follow after someone dumbly or blindly. It is to wake up and to realize who and what you truly are. I wanted to close with some wonderful stories about Anandi Moyima. And this is incidents from an intimate devotee's diary. Once I heard this story directly from Yogesh Da, who participated in the incident. At the time, Ma was staying near Siddheshwari at Dhaka. Baba Bolanath, Ma's saintly husband, was very ill and diagnosed as having an abscess on the liver. It may burst if not operated at once. Ma took her seat on the cot of Baba, her husband, and did not eat anything for 17 or 18 days. You have to understand that Ma was also in the habit for months and sometimes years, she would eat 9 grains of rice a day. That's it. After this time, she asked Yogesh Da to accompany her to Siddheshwari, Kali Temple. There she took up a brass cup and began to rub her hand on the edge as if trying to cut herself, while saying to Yogesh Ji, "Will you be able to help?" Then she asked him to find an axe for splitting wood. He was able to find a small axe that was a very dull from cutting logs. Taking up the tool on her hand, Ma pointed to the spot above her elbow and said, "See if you can cut it." In terrified but loving obedience, Yogesh Da pressed the point with his hand and began to slash with the dull axe. The tool pressed the flesh of Ma's soft arm, but did not cut. Ma told him, "You will have to cut by one stroke only." Then Yogesh used the axe with full force and cut deeply into Ma's arm, but no blood emerged. Ma pressed and tried to get some blood. Seeing this, Yogesh Da pressed with strong pressure and got one drop of blood. Then Ma asked him to put the blood on a bell leaf and offer it in the yajna fire. In this way, Ma took the operation crisis on her own body, and Baba Bolanath got well very soon. Another story. Brahmachari Yogadesh told me about this, his time of wandering in the hilly tracks of Uttarakhand with Baba Bolanath, Baiji, and Ma. On one of these journeys, they all lay down at night in a small temple which had no door. Ma said, "Be alert." Baiji replied, "Ma, why should we fear when you are with us?" Hearing this, Ma smiled and said, "The thief also is directed by this body." That's how she referred to herself, as this body. It reminds me of the story of Master. There was a couple of elderly disciples who would come, when they came to service, they oftentimes had presents and other things in their car. They wouldn't lock the car. So Master, coming to know this, he said, "No, you should lock your car and be safe. You know, you leave presents back there, somebody could come along and take them. No, no, we have faith in God. Well, apparently they may have had faith in God, but they didn't have faith in Guru, because they didn't do it, and a week or two later, they had many valuable things stolen out of their car when they left it unlocked. So we should still lock our cars. Ma once was in Varanasi and was not keeping well. She had a temperature and acute headache. She was in the first floor room. In the morning, I went to have a glimpse of her and peeped in through the door. Ma was lying with closed eyes on her back. I felt badly seeing Ma suffering so much and prayed silently in my heart, "You suffer not for yourself, as you have no pending karma. You suffer due to our sin. Please forgive us and get well soon." I was surprised to see that Ma turned left and, looking at me, said slowly, "When a child clings to its mother's bosom, it kicks and hurts her. But does the mother take offense at this?" I thought that meant that whatever offensive thing I do, Ma won't take it as an offense. But I also knew that Ma was very strict with us. Then why did she say this? In the course of time, it was clear to me. Ma won't take offense if we only cling to her as our only refuge, as an egoless and fearless baby. Jai Ma. Victory to Ma. These stories of saints and realized beings are inspiring. They're not just inspiring. But when we take in these words and the vibrations of the words, they change us. They speak to us to something very deeply. And when we know that divine consciousness is operating all around us, how could we ever be bored? How could we ever be exhausted of this world? Knowing that the divine life is pervading everything that is. This Kshatriya Ajna here is the light of your being. And when you focus on that, and then you see that light, when I look at that, what I see is a beautiful pearl essence light. And what I hear at the medulla, even as I'm speaking to you, is this wonderful sound of Om flowing in. And I feel a pressure there at the Ajna. And it's an opening. And it opens into a vast realm of spirit. Now, as this is not for me only, it is for you as well. But we have to make the effort. We have to strive for it. We have to believe in it. Not because we're just believing in something for the sake of believing in it. But by believing in it, we make an effort for it. And when we make the effort, we get the results. We get the results. So please, make the effort. Come into the kingdom of your own being. The kingdom of heaven within you. And realize this great truth. It is standing before you. And ready to reveal itself to you. May you have the blessings of the God and Gurus. May they always be showering their bliss, their peace, their joy upon you. Hold you within them. Guide you. Direct you. And see that you have the greatest and most perfect fulfillment. Om Tat Sat. You please pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. Beloved Jesus Christ. I feel the wonder and the beauty. Of thy glorious presence. In every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Peace, bliss, amen.